You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
What going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Lookout Landing Podcast. I am, of course, your host, your friend, your guiding light through this troubling time without baseball, Matthew Robertson, Lookout Landing staff writer and podcast extraordinaire. And today, for our 101st episode, we have decided to pivot back to baseball graciously and talk about the team that is the whole reason for this website's existence. And I cannot accurately do that without two of, I think, the most well-informed, well-adjusted Mariners people anywhere on the internet, Kate Prusser and John Troopin. Welcome to the digital space that we both share here.
Hello. What going on? That is from a Kyle Lewis video yesterday, if you do not understand that reference, which, unless you are incredibly online, you probably do not. It snowed in Georgia yesterday, because normal weather things, and Kyle Lewis was shocked. He said it is a blizzard. Reader, it was not a blizzard, but I'm sure if you live in Georgia and you don't see snow, it looked pretty intense. So I'm sure Kyle is ready for spring training. I am too.
John, how's the weather in your neck of the woods out there in upstate New York?
It did snow 9 to 10 inches on
what?
Friday.
That's not a number.
So that was certainly impactful for the old commute. In that we ceased to commute, but
impactful.
It is. It's snowy, but you know, not too bad. It is supposed to be a high of 8 and a low of -5 one day this week coming up, which I am not psyched for. But you know, when it's snowy outside and I'm indoors, it's real rough. You know, they don't tell you this about other places, but you know it. It gets cold.
Wow. Huge, if true. Working to confirm.
Sounds incredibly unpleasant.
I mean, I did just go out and throw the first flat ground of the year in our driveway, because that has been cleared out. And because, there's like baseball things supposedly starting in like a month or two places. I'll believe it when I see it, but you know, you can make it work if you just very well insulated, I suppose.
Best shape of his life trooping over here.
That's me.
Yeah, how's the old arm feeling? You think you'd give the Mariners a couple innings this year if need be?
Certainly. Would be a heck of a commute, but you know, when they come to play the Mets, I'll be down there. I'll be in uniform, ready just in case.
Which, how much worse of an option is John than anyone who's currently in our bullpen? Let's discuss that.
Yeah. I think you would fit in pretty nicely in the who is this guy, how did he get here, and that's not to disparage any of the Mariners' wonderful bullpen acquisitions, but it's going to be a lot of, I think the first month of the year is going to be a lot of people in the stands Googling who is this guy, trying
maybe
to
figure Dave out where Sims Googling from. Some people.
So I think if John wants to just put a uniform on and just show up at the clubhouse one day, I feel like you could probably at least get in the door.
I got to be honest, Troopin is a lot easier to pronounce than Margavichus. Anyway, the guy that the Mariners claimed on waivers off the Padres recently.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not a very impressive group, and I don't know. Do we want to start with the bullpen? I'm a little bit not disappointed because it's whatever. It's a bullpen for a team that's going to be bad. But I was curious if they would sort of put some money into the bullpen and say, okay, we're going to try and get some guys here that will flip at the deadline for prospects. And they did that a little bit, but you know, they didn't really go for any established, likely closer kind of candidates, did they?
They didn't go for anyone I mean, I would say that Carl Edwards Jr. is established.
He established, but then he was, you know, he was terrible just, and yeah, hurt he, last he, year, he, right?
Yeah, so I mean, they're banking on a bounce back year from him, right? But I like the upside. I'm excited about Carl Edwards Jr. So is projection system Pecota, right, John?
It is indeed Pecota.
I mean, we're using excited in a really broad, like very, very, very broad spectrum sense here.
Certainly in a comparative sense, yeah. The Pecota does project Carl Edwards Jr. to be the Mariners' best pitcher, not just best bullpen option, but best pitcher in total. Which again,
is bad.
Is
grim. Bad. That's
yes. I think it's a little bit overly negative in a few places, but it should give you a reasonable sense of, you know, where things could go.
I'd like to know what Marco Gonzalez ever did to Pecota or any of these projection systems, because they just hate him. I mean, they hate him so much.
You don't give up many homers, and you give up a lot of fly balls, and people are going to look at you a little askance. And by people, I mean algorithms.
Algorithms are people, too.
That's true. That's what the Supreme Court has said. So, yeah, right now, we can start from the back, I guess. You've got, you know, Yoshihisa Hirano, who is, you know, one of the free agent signings. You got Carl Edwards Jr., who you mentioned. And then maybe Matt McGill and Sam Tuivalala as, like, the... I mean, I don't even know if they'll have a traditional
maybe
closer.
The guys. Yeah.
But, like, the, you know, that's sort of the high-leverage guys. And hopefully you see Brandon Brennan have more of the sort of the good stretch before he, you know, went down with injury.
Right.
Because, you know, he sort of had a couple really bad games that skewed his numbers there. But, I mean, you know, and it's like all those guys could be fine, but none of them...
I'd throw Art Warren into that mix if he's healthy. I think
that's fair.
Art's a back end. His stuff definitely profiles as back end. You know, he's big fastball, really wicked curveball. So
yeah,
and another pitch he can throw as well, pitcher two. So,
yeah, you know, it's a type of bullpen where you look at it and you're like, you know, none of these guys. I look at it and I think of no, none of these guys look atrocious, but it's also I'm not super confident.
I think it's a, it, there's basically, maybe the thing that I feel is the surest thing in the bullpen is Brennan, and even he is like, I mean, I might give it
1 year.
Yeah, I might get, well, and it was a year that was marked by some health issues and some, when he was throwing, I don't know how much of it was related to the health issues, but he had some real rough stretches there, so.
Yeah.
And he's still a Rule 5 guy. Speaking of Rule 5 guys, we've also got Johan Ramirez in there, who was the Mariners' Rule 5 claim from the Astros. Hard thrower, poor control, as most of the Astros' bullpen are, well, most of the Astros' prospect pitching prospects really are. Hard throwers, poor controllers. So we don't know what he's got. Obviously, he's got enough that the Mariners liked him and passed over, I think, a lot of more popular names in order to get him. So,
Yeah, and you'll eventually get Austin Adams back, and that should be very exciting.
But, I love him so
obviously
much.
Huge bummer that he was sidelined, with his ACL tear, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And
a bad one, too. Pretty bad. Yeah. I don't anticipate seeing him, you know, until the back half of the season, honestly.
Yeah, which, but
Matt McGill, I think, has a pretty... If you're looking for a solid floor reliever, McGill will be fine, I think. Like, I think that there's a good chance that he becomes the closer just because... I'm not sure about Hirano. I'm not sold, honestly. Maybe the Mariners adjust his pitch mix. John just wrote a really good article about how you can go into that a little bit. I'm still a doubter on Hirano. I think McGill has a good, this is maybe like edging into fantasy baseball talk, as we try to figure out who's going to collect that all important saves stat for the Mariners. I mean, obviously you don't want to pick anyone, like, they're not a good bet because we don't know where the saves are going to go, and they're probably not going to go to any one person. But
and there probably won't be that many.
Yeah, but I think Matt McGill is probably a pretty safe option. He's available, he doesn't get hurt, and he was pretty effective, and he got better as he went along as a Mariner. So Art Warren is my big upside pick, but Matt McGill is my safe floor pick. All right, please talk about Hirano, though.
The most recent free agent signing the team made, Yoshihisa Hirano, had a really great year results-wise, his first year in 2018, rather. Had a interesting but less successful results-wise year last year, mainly because he was just getting absolutely just having a lot tougher time with BABIP issues and strand rate issues, give up a few more homers. But he's got a really good splitter, essentially. And he was throwing it more last year, and the first half of the year, he was looking just across the board better. He was striking out more people. He was getting more outs. His numbers look great. And then started easing off the splitter, started getting hit more, went on the disabled list, or the injured list, rather, with arm troubles, came back in September, wasn't throwing the splitter nearly as often, was getting hammered. He's 35, and he throws a splitter a ton, and there's a lot of sort of mixed opinions on whether that is a pitch that is more dangerous for you or not. If he's able to throw it even more, it's about a 50-50 breakdown of four-seam and splitter right now. But, like, basically you're thinking about a Fernando Rodney kind of look of, like, low to mid-90s fastball, low 80s
changeup. Hate that comparison. Sorry, well, I know, like, it's very, very beloved, but...
Well, I mean, that's sort of the thing with Rodney was, right, like, he has this extraordinary two-pitch combo, and the changeup is unlike anything most people can throw, and so that's what's kept him in the league for, 16 years or whatever.
He is older than you think he is. No matter how old you think Fernando Rodney is, add, 4 years onto it, and that's how old he actually is.
Turns 43 in March, and, God. he's not great, but he's been reasonable, and he's had some great years. That is, Hirano essentially is looking at, okay, how often can I throw this split changeup? And I would imagine the Mariners are going to try and push him to throw it a lot, because that's how he can be successful. And if he can stay healthy, not only will he probably be successful, but he may very well be a guy who in July or they will be able to trade for some younger prospect. But you know, it's not the type of sort of more slam dunk right. signing, but you know, that is what it is, and it's not a bad group there. There's also, I think someone has noted, a few people have noted, the Tacoma rotation, or not rotation, but bullpen, is arguably as qualified or as good as the big league one may be, but just because they have people on the 40-man and people they don't have to have on the 40-man yet.
Right.
You know, we'll probably see a lot of people moved if they're having good years this year.
Yep. So the back half of the season is going to have I think the bullpen's going to be rough to start with. Hopefully some guys are able to be successful and be traded and create some spaces for some younger guys. But if you're looking for some names to watch in the second half, I would say probably number one on my list, and someone, again, to put a fantasy spin on it, that you might want to kind of keep on your radar, think about getting a share of, would be Sam Delaplane, who has just been, I mean, he's amazing. He's not tall. He's like 5'9", 6 foot, maybe?
Yeah, he's listed, I think at 5'11". Yeah, 5'11".
Yeah, he's definitely shorter than that. Not tall, does not throw hard, somehow can strike out everyone in the world, like including a rehabbing Yadi Molina last year. I mean, he is nasty.
Yeah, we saw him in the Arizona Fall League. Still, oh yeah, just, you know, just really handling some of the best prospects in baseball.
And it's always a question of how this stuff is going to transfer to the major leagues, but the guy has had success just at every single stop. And for some reason, just hasn't gotten a ton of press, because I guess he was a late round draft pick. He wasn't really ever a starter. He was mostly just a reliever. You know, he comes out of a system that's been pretty unheralded the last few years. I don't know whatever reason, but I think Sam Delaplane is out to shock the world this year. That's my hot take.
I also, Kate, I love you giving a voice to the men of Tinder everywhere, because you said Sam Delaplane, he's either 5'9 or 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I don't know.
Around to the nearest 6 feet.
Honestly, if you're under 6 feet, like, it's all just kind of the same to me. Sorry. All those numbers are the same.
All my 5'10 kings, it's time to embrace being 5'10. No more of this, oh, I'm 6 feet in the right shoes, or I'm 5'11 and a half. Just be 5'10, all right? There's a market for the 5'10, man.
I mean, Sam Delaplane is about to make being sub 6 foot in MLB cool again, so.
Yeah, him and Shedrick, they can carry that torch.
And Sheffield, who I do not think, listed at 6 foot, do not actually think he's 6 feet tall.
No chance of that.
No, baseball player heights are definitely Tinder heights. Like, you gotta adjust for inflation.
I also want to shout out Nestor Cortez, listed at 5'11", which means he's probably like 5'6".
5'8". Yeah. 5'6".
But that's another, like, exciting probably isn't the right word, but at least intriguing, maybe. I mean, I can't say I've seen him pitch very much, but he has shown flashes when he was on the big league club for the Yankees of, like, having pretty, like, good stuff. It's just a matter of, like, with every bullpen guy, if they can repetitively find that stuff.
Right. And, you know, if he's not good, like, at very least he's fun. Like, he throws from a bunch of different deliveries. He's got a big personality. He was beloved by the Yankee fan base as a minor leaguer, which I think is rare. Like, people were genuinely sad when the Mariners claimed him, so he made Yankees fans feel warm things in their hearts, which I think is a testament to his character, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm gonna need one of these relievers to pop from a personality standpoint, otherwise it's gonna be a pretty trying year for me, because I think we're also gonna see a lot of the they're like shuttling guys up and down, and we're going to see like 27 different relievers by the end of the year. And if none of them have any sort of remarkable things outside of baseball, then I'm going to have probably to just log off for all of August and September and just stop paying attention.
Who is your choice, Matthew? Who do you get a sense is going to be a personality guy?
Probably Carl Edwards. I think there's a chance for Tui. Tui is like sneakily online. Like he will express not really opinions, but express things on Twitter, which means that he, like in real life, he probably has a lot of other things he would like to express. You know, we only get the sense of what he thinks is worthy for Twitter. So I think maybe, you know, if he gets the rare chance to maybe be on camera, do some Jen Mueller interviews, I think Tui maybe has something for us. But other than that, I mean, I'm literally looking at the roster right now, and like, I have almost zero opinion on Gilbo, Zach Groats, like.
Oh, Zach Gross has a personality. He definitely. Have you never seen the video of him breakdancing in the Travelers locker room? All right, I will find it and drop it in the Slack. Zach Gross definitely has a personality. Okay, it's just, you know, we haven't seen a lot of these guys because for a lot of them it was like, all off season long. I'm sure Zach Gross himself has been wondering if the DFA. Hammer is going to fall on him. So far, so good. But, you know, we lost Reggie McClain, who was a good personality in his own right. Got claimed by the Phillies. Put up a hilarious video the other day of himself, because he's been a Mariner his whole career. So he put up a video of himself trying to take batting practice. Pitchers who rake. Hashtag pitchers who rake. And, just trying to take bunts, and it was hilarious. So, good luck in Philadelphia, Reggie.
Yes, we're all rooting for Reggie. May you never have to face the Houston Astros again.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
I also want to point out that in looking at the 40-man roster, Yoshi Hirano is listed as number 6, which I think probably will be the first single-digit reliever in Mariner history for the very small subset of people who care about that sort of thing. That is something to monitor. He was wearing 66 in Arizona and apparently has decided that 1-6 will suffice in Seattle. So for the jersey number hive, get excited. Okay. Do you want to maybe talk about the outfield? Because I think with Mitch Haniger's injury that'll keep him out for the beginning of the season, we're also going to see some weird outfield combinations. I think there are some guys who are there for the glove and some guys who are maybe more there for the bat, or some guys who we don't really know what they are yet. So I want to pose this question to you guys. On opening day, what do you think the Mariners' outfield alignment will be?
If they're facing, who do they play opening day? Do we know off the top of my head who the team is that they play?
90% sure it's
the
Texas.
Rangers. Isn't it the Rangers? I mean, yeah. They play, they don't have opening day at T-Mobile. Still trying to make my mouth say that, right? Are you asking who they have their home opener against, or who?
No, I simply, the opening day, basically, it would be a right-handed pitcher or a lefty? Because I think that will probably be a bit of the breakdown there. Well, because then, you know, if it's a righty, which Texas it would be, I think you get Kyle Lewis in left field, I think you get Malik Smith in center, and I think you get Jake Fraley in right field.
Yeah, we do get the Rangers, so we're gonna be. It's gonna be Corey Kluber
or Lance Lynn.
Oh, hey, let's do Corey Kluber again, because wasn't that who the Mariners had opening day against last year when they? No, that's not
right. No, it was 2018. That was 2018 with Felix.
That's right.
And a surprising win.
Yes, yeah, but they won that game. That's right. I was mixing it up because I was thinking about the fact that the last two opening days have been. Unprobable wins, right? Felix.
Extremely improbable.
Yeah, we had Felix winning against Corey Kluber, and then we had the Red Sox. And whatever happened in that game, that was a weird one. It was Marco.
Tim Beckham, two homers.
Yeah, definitely not sign stealing is what it was.
Definitely not sign stealing.
Beat them fair and square at their own game.
Yeah. Definitely just Chris Sale being absolutely much worse than Tim Beckham repeatedly.
Yeah, so weird. So, such a weird, weird, weird times. So, I agree with John. I think, like, that's very likely what we'll see. I don't know if somebody's gonna, like, come forward and pop at camp, but I feel pretty safe in saying Lewis, Fraley, Malik Smith.
Yeah. I mean, that's the, you know, there's, because if you're looking at the other people who it could be, right? Assuming health, you know, for everyone else other than Haniger, obviously, you know, Braden Bishop, you probably don't put in the starting lineup.
On opening day? No.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean, maybe any other day, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think you see a decent amount of him, especially because he's obviously such a defensive and base running, you know, positive, but I just don't know how you... I don't think there's anything Braden Bishop could show up and do during spring training that would just suddenly make people think, like, oh my God, this is a dramatically different player than what we've seen before. Like, no, it's, you know, he has more or less, you know, he has more or less gotten to about as much offense as you could probably expect from him. And he's done that in the minors, and you just kind of have to see, can that translate to the bigs? And but I think they'll have that be more of a bench role. So, you know, beyond that, I don't think we see Jose Siri, who has, I believe, played a little bit in AAA, who they claimed on waivers from Cincinnati. You know, I think he is pretty well set to start in the minors. And hopefully get some time to work on his busted series of swings.
Busted swings.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, like, there's a lot of potential there, and he's shown stretches of that, and I don't know that he's gotten sort of consistent coaching, it doesn't sound like. So hopefully he gets some time there. But I think it is really, for as much flux as it could be, the outfield depth is pretty well stratified there, and they were going to already be struggling to find plate appearances for all the guys they want.
I suppose you could put Eric Fulia into that mix, but they didn't invite him to spring training originally, so despite kind of tearing up the Dominican League, it seems like he is persona non grata with the team, which I think is foolish at this point. You know, trading.
Well, and he just doesn't have a 40-man spot, you know, so there's only really so much.
Yeah, so even if he does, like, go out and just rake in spring training, it's, I think he's got a longer road to proving that he could potentially have a big league spot. And I hope he does get a shot, because he deserves it. Been in the system for a long time. In a year like this, like, why not? So, but I don't think opening day.
I would almost like to see them do this, do the outfield, like, hockey style, where you have just lines and you, like, switch them over completely.
Right.
I mean, Kyle Lewis probably deserves a spot every day, but, like, they could do three outfielders one day and then the next day three new ones, because I want to see everyone just at least have a shot. Like, Braden Bishop deserves to be able to play center field just from a defensive standpoint, because I think he's pretty clearly the best of this group. I mean, Malik Smith is probably not a center fielder. He can just cover the most ground, so I think that's how he ended up in center. But I want to see Bishop play. I want to see Dylan Moore do some more incredible things in left field at the most truly improbable times. I think we deserve that. Patrick Wisdom, does he play outfield at all? Yeah,
who?
Lopes. Does Patrick Wisdom play outfield at all?
No, I think he is third base, first base, right?
I believe he's played a little bit of left field, but not a. He is definitely an infielder who, you know, has been made to be a very rarely an outfielder.
Sure, but again, why not? Like Tim
no, certainly. Left
field
certainly.
Last year.
Let's certainly. Get weird.
Just let everything happen. What even is outfield? You know, it's what we make it.
I mean, I think that there's a real good chance that the Rays at some point attempt to run out a two-man outfield with Manuel Margot, who they just traded for, who is one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. And they already have Kevin Kiermaier, who is also one of the best defense. So I
put that out there with Charlie Morton, just getting all those grounders. I mean, that'd be.
I mean, just have like a four man or a five man in. I don't know. It'd be wacky, but it'd be fun.
Hmm. I think that you're not necessarily going to see this at the big league level, but I do think that for as little as you can necessarily put into spring training, actual results, I do think it'll be very fun this spring.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see more or less the line changes thing, at least in spring training.
Absolutely.
Except the line is going to also include Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, which is
Luis Liberato, and
So you'll get just quite a bit of present and hopefully future looks there. But I do think that Sam Haggerty is also, I suppose, there. He's played a fair amount of outfield. We aren't totally clear. Sorry, Sam, why he's been on the 40 man still, but
nope.
Sure is. I think it'll be...
Well, they're DFAing pitchers who are getting picked up on waivers elsewhere because the Mariners' pitching development is no longer, I think, a secret. So Ricardo Sanchez just got picked up by the Cardinals?
Cardinals.
I knew it was a red team. And then Reggie, we said, went to Philadelphia. So we're not exactly sneaking guys through on waivers right now.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what Sam Haggerty is bringing, but I mean, we'll see. Good year to come to spring training, for sure, I think.
Certainly.
John, as a person who has seen Sam Haggerty play in real life in the flesh, give us the elevator pitch on him.
Elevator pitch is... can play. I mean, good defense at multiple positions. He is quite fast. Like he is legitimately quite fast. Not Malik Smith fast, but sort of the next reasonable step below that. I mean, he is a good runner and he's a very good base stealer. Doesn't have like what we would think of as like big league power, but decent bat to ball and somehow or another has sort of kind of continued to manage to have somewhat respectable like walk rates all throughout the minors. Don't know if that translates when pitching gets better and they're like, oh, you've hit less than 20 home runs in your 5 year professional career. We'll just kind of throw it down the middle and see what happens with you. But if you need Dylan Moore but you trade out power for fewer strikeouts, like, that's Sam Haggerty, probably.
Right, I'm out, probably.
Yeah, a ringing endorsement.
I mean, me too. And it's like, it's a useful player. It's just the Mariners have six of those types of players. And so it gets increasingly less exciting, especially on a team where, like, you have enough players to fill all the positions that you want, and you'd rather probably see those 40-man spots go to like high upside kind of guys like Jose Siri or or potential starting pitchers like Ricardo Sanchez.
Jose Siri could have the big personality that I think this team is lacking. He's a big bat flipper. He is sort of famous in the Dominican. People love him. He plays with a ton of emotion. He was obviously
His nickname was El Loco on his own team. Yeah.
Which is, again, considering where the bar is set in baseball in the Dominican Republic, is already pretty high. I mean, there's a good potential he could just nuke MLB from orbit, which I think is incredibly exciting. And maybe considering the state of MLB right now, something we could all use. Reds fans have been just waiting on the arrival of him forever. So it's really fun to take somebody who's a super well-regarded, high-upside prospect from another system and kind of test out the Mariners' player development system and see what they can do. So I'm really excited to see what Siri can do. It's Siri, right? Siri?
Yeah.
It's not like the digital assistant. It's like Siri. It's like...
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited for him. I'm excited for Margevichus, whose name I will learn how to say. I've just been calling him Margevichus in my head for so long. And Large
Vicious Marge.
He's a big boy.
Vicious Marge.
Marge Simpson.
That's my prison nickname. He's 6'5". he's a big boy, but he does not throw hard. And a wacky, sort of like Jose Siri was promoted weirdly throughout the Red system. Like, never really got... Matthew, you know more about this. Like, he was promoted... Maybe not after demonstrating what we might call competence at certain levels, just kind of moved up for...
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have something. I wrote the 40 and 40 on Marge Simpsoness, which will be up at some point, maybe even before this episode comes out. But yeah, he essentially had a really good spring training in 2019 with the Padres, and essentially, from what I could gather, kind of forced their hand and was like, well, we got to see what he can do in the real games, and their fifth starter was going to be basically a minor league guy anyway, so they were like, might as well give it to him, and they can keep, I believe it's Cal Quantrill and Logan Allen were the ones that he kind of beat out, who they've just stashed in their minors. But anyway, so Margevichus, Marge Simpsoness, Magev, whatever, came up and was not very good. He got beat to shit, basically, in one start by the Rockies at Coors Field, which can happen, and then they sent him back to Double A, where he probably should have been the entire time. But they needed a warm body in that fifth spot. So he got a chance. And, like, he wasn't awful in every start, but he never really showed, like, he could be a guy. He strikes me as a big, like, shuttle guy between Tacoma and Seattle. Might be a long reliever. The best-case scenario is literally fifth starter. So get
You're
excited.
Saying, you got, like, an Ariel Miranda kind of vibe from him.
I guess, yeah, that's probably a decent comparison. I mean, his actual pitching style is going to be a lot of the Wade LeBlanc, Tommy Malone, just nibble on the edges, and if it ends up in the middle, it's going 500 feet, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, he's a big control command guy, but does not maybe have anything that is over, which is weird, because he's 6'5". He should be able to throw the ball harder, I feel like, so... I don't know, maybe the Mariners help him out with his mechanics. Send him off to gas camp. Do something. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited.
I also love a lot of these scouting reports we've given. Kate, I believe earlier you said Brennan will be the most available.
Matt McGill.
Like, he's here. Like, there's a lot of guys who were like, John earlier said about Sam Haggerty, he can play.
So
we have some guys who are willing and able to play baseball. That's all you can ask for.
Y'all, it's going to be a rough season.
Mariners Baseball 2020, get hype, baby.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Like,
okay, wait, let me actually, serious question. Where do you think the Mariners, like, if you had to power rank, do you think the Mariners are one of the five worst teams in baseball? Like, what teams can you definitively say the Mariners will be better than this year? I can think of probably two.
I think they are one of the five worst teams in baseball.
For sure, they're one of the five worst.
I think they are better than the Tigers.
Yeah, that's
definitely better than the Tigers.
I think they are better than the Orioles.
Yeah, those are
probably
the
yes,
say.
Better than the Orioles.
I think you're obviously walking to your opinion. I don't think the Orioles have any like league average players other than Trey Mancini.
Here's who finished below the Mariners last year when they finished in sixth. Toronto was fifth. Kansas City was fourth. Miami was third. Baltimore was second. Detroit was first. So out of those teams, Detroit, Baltimore, Miami, Kansas City, Toronto, Who do you think is definitively still under the Mariners, and who could leapfrog them this year?
Well, I think Miami and Toronto are for sure going to be better than the Mariners.
They've
added a lot of big league players.
Yes, I agree.
Now get Bichette and Vlad Jr. and Kevin Biggio having another year under their belt. They're going to be better. They're not going to be good, but they're going to be better than the Mariners.
Yes.
I think Kansas City is going to be right. In terms of draft position, we're probably going to be neck and neck with Kansas City.
Right.
Yeah.
For one of those bottom spots.
Yeah, I could see. See, I think the Mariners are slightly better than the Royals, but I think in terms of roster, because they'll be in the AL Central versus the AL West, I think the Mariners are going to lose more games.
I agree. Yeah.
And I feel very similarly about the Pirates, who I think are similar quality to the Royals and Mariners, but are going to fewer games because they're in a softer sort of league and division.
Last year, it was really, there was a big gap. Detroit, Baltimore, Miami, Kansas City, none of them won over 60 games. Then it was a big jump to Toronto. So Toronto, Seattle, and Pittsburgh were all clustered up. 67, 68, 69 wins. Nice. San Diego had 70. Colorado had 71. LA had 72. And then things jump a little more from beyond there. I think it's pretty clear that LA, Colorado, we really hope San Diego are all out of that area. I don't know about Colorado.
I think Colorado is the opposite direction. I think Colorado could very easily be
I think Colorado might be worse
than the Mariners.
Hot take. I do not think so.
Record-wise, because I think that as a quality of team, no.
Is Mookie Betts a Dodger in this scenario?
Yes.
Okay, if Mookie Betts is a Dodger, I think there's a good chance that the Colorado is neck and neck with the Mariners for badness.
I see the NL West as having three over 500 teams, and the Giants being not great, but not a disaster.
But not disastrous, yeah.
And I can see the Rockies being a disaster very easily. I can see them being comparable to the Giants, but I think they have the chance to really collapse, especially considering they're coming into the season, having spent most of the winter debating trading their franchise player. I think pretty much every other team in the NL, other than the Rockies and the Pirates and the Marlins, has a shot at a playoff spot. Oh, and the Giants, I guess, but has a shot at the playoffs. I think the Giants shouldn't be awful. They'll be like the most mediocre team in the NL. And then, I think that puts the Mariners at around the fourth worst team for me.
Yeah, that was my kind of thought too. I mean,
Or at least record wise, and it's like fourth to sixth in terms of actual quality.
Yeah, those games against Detroit and Baltimore that we play are like going to be, I think, unfortunately, very important for teams that are this bad. Like, they're going to have real implications, which is a weird thing to say about games that will have maybe 20 eyes on them. But I mean, if you wanna have sort of that perverse satisfaction of rooting for the Mariners to lose, definitely save that energy for the Detroit and Baltimore series.
Yeah, I think that the Mariners are still maybe a fourth, just because I think Detroit and Kansas City will split a lot of games between them. So I think that the Mariners could sneak up into like third worst, depending on Colorado. But I don't see them as much higher than the fourth worst team in MLB this year, which honestly, if you're gonna suck, like, suck out loud. So obviously we want to see the young, I want to see individual good performances, but ultimately that result in them losing games. So it's gonna be a real razor thin wire that I'm walking this season with fandom.
I mean, I think this year, at least for me personally, will be a lot easier, because I think if the team is having more success than expected, then it is pretty much a universal positive, because the reason they'll be having success is because players who are going to be there for a while are going to be outperforming expectations. You know, last year they won a fair number of games because Jay Bruce and Edwin Encarnacion and,
right.
You know, well, not really Anthony Swarzak, but, you know, a lot of the older guys, Tim Beckham, you know, just had really surprisingly strong, or not necessarily surprisingly, but had good stretches. And we knew at best that meant, you know, you'd get slightly more prospect-wise back, but not really. Now, pretty much universally, if they're ahead of schedule, quote-unquote, then that will be just reflecting very well. And I actually am hoping that that's the case, because they need some of the guys that are on their roster right now to be more than what the industry sense of them is, yeah, necessarily. Because the prospects look pretty, you know, interesting and exciting, but they can't just have it be, oh, when Kelnick and Julio are here, then they'll have something. You know, it has to also be J.P. Crawford is better, or Shed Long is better, or, you know, Jake Fraley or Kyle Lewis are, you know, actual solid players. Things like, you know, things like that, where Justice Sheffield, Justin Dunn, those guys are actual, dependable, okay, we can start planning with this guy in mind kind of things.
We got a great question in the mailbag the other day, asking which Mariners player or prospect we think is underrated by the major outlets. And I went with Logan Gilbert, because I think, John, you and I have talked about kind of our frustrations about the fact that Matt Manning is from the Tigers is pretty consistently rated really highly, like top 20 prospect in baseball, some outlets. And Logan is more in like the 50-60 range. Whereas the two of them had very similar, pretty similar performances. Manning didn't go to college, so he's been in the league longer, has a longer minor league career. But Logan has pretty much posted similar numbers to him at every stop. They're about neck and neck in where they are, which, since Logan went to college, they're about the same age, about the same level now. Manning has a bigger, nastier fastball. I think his stuff is viewed as nastier. Gilbert somehow has, like, sort of that crafty lefty about him, even though he's a righty, which he's actually a lefty. He writes with his left hand, so that sort of... He projects big left-hander energy. I recognize it in him. But I just... I think he's been so undervalued, and I really think he comes up and makes a splash this year. So I'm interested in hearing from you guys, like, who your player is.
I think Jake Fraley for me. I can't remember if I answered the question or not. I definitely thought Jake Fraley. I can't remember if that's what I actually wrote in the mailbag itself, but I really like his swing. I think he's sort of really refined himself down. He's obviously had an issue with staying healthy and staying on the field, but he's performed fabulously. He performed spectacularly in Double A last year. He had pretty good season prior to being acquired by the Mariners in Tampa. He's got great base stealing instincts. He's got the speed to be a reasonably rangy outfielder. I think he will have the power to be a sort of 10 to 15 home run guy in the bigs. Maybe more if the baseball stays kind of wonky, but you know, he's an older prospect. He'll be 20. This will be his quote unquote age 25 season, based on the cutoff. But you know, I'm really excited to see him get extended play. I'm sad about Mitch Haniger obviously being out. That's not a positive for the team, but the fact that it means Fraley will be playing almost every day is very exciting in terms of getting to see if he's legit, and I think he is pretty legit. So I'm hopeful.
I'll go Kyle Lewis for this one. I'm not a huge like list guy. I'm not like, you know, keeping up with all of them, agonizing over people's placements. But I do feel like Kyle Lewis, due to the injury, obviously. I mean, a lot of the prospect sheen, I guess, kind of wore off. People got pretty down on him. But from what we saw last year, and like obviously, yes, very, very small sample size, but I guess for me, the main thing that excites me about him is just how hard he hits the ball. Like, results are always going to be fickle. Absolutely. But just the way that he absolutely demolishes the ball. And I like his swing. I mean, the leg kick, people have lots of opinions on big leg kicks and how that will affect timing and all the things that can go wrong with it. But just from a personal standpoint, like, I think it looks cool, which I know is not how scouting works, but like,
no, but it is an aesthetically fabulous swing when he makes contact, and it looks terrible when he misses, but man, it absolutely looks great.
That's power hitting, right? That's being a power hitter.
Yeah, that's what I felt about Ryan Healy, too. His home run swing was gorgeous, but then he just swung at so many pitches that were in different zip codes that it became hard to keep supporting him. But also the thing about Lewis that, I mean, like I said, it's a very small sample size, but if you look at the home runs, he got Trevor Bauer, he got Sonny Gray, and he got Kelvin Herrera, who were all very established big leaguers. I think all have been all-stars at one point. And, like, again, like, it's the end of the season. They were all playing for bad teams. Like, it's not the same as, you know, doing this all season against guys who are in the race or whatever. But, like, that's still encouraging. Like, he wasn't just getting numbers against nobodies. Like, that Red series really obviously caught all of our attention because he was hitting so many home runs in his first week. But when you actually think about who those came off of, I think it gives you a little more of a look into maybe what kind of hitter he could be, or at least the kind of player that he wants to be in, like, sort of quote-unquote big moments. I mean, that's as big as you can get for him,
right,
given the circumstances of last season. But getting to face guys who have big league track records, who, I mean, Trevor Bauer, when he's on, is one of the probably the best pitchers talent-wise in the league. And, like, to see Kyle Lewis just absolutely turn his stuff around and hit it out of the stadium almost was super cool. So I'm going to go Kyle Lewis on that one. I think that he has the potential, I think, to make a lot of people look stupid from a talent evaluation standpoint.
And let's not forget about Kyle Lewis's other great skill, which is having a fun personality, which will be important in a bad year.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And I think this is also where we can get into a
What going on? I just isolated and made a file of it because I like it so much.
It is great. It is great. And the question we're going to be asking ourselves a lot this year while watching the Mariners.
That's
what
true.
Is, in fact, going on?
What going on?
Do you think, I got to, just real quick, do we think we have a moment like the I believe it was grounder to Dylan Moore where he then threw it to home plate and Omar Narvaez just wasn't there? Like, do we think we have something as wonky as that this year? Or do we think that's like the worst is behind us in terms of that? Like, this team doesn't look like it knows what, you know, its ass from its elbow, as it were.
I mean, we can't rule it out, obviously. There's going to be a lot of guys learning on the job. I'm sure we'll get, like, minor ones, like throwing to the wrong base. I don't know if there will actually be a person there, but I think, I mean, there is going to be a lot of rough patches, honestly. I think defense will be very, very rough at times, given some of the alignments. I mean, I think we have some improvements. Like, catcher is the big one, obviously, where I think things will be a little more palatable, but like,
defensively,
we're still gonna see,
for sure. Yes.
Yeah,
we're still gonna see some stuff. I mean,
I remember like Shed Long stuff.
Shed at Fenway last year was a pretty big disaster defensively, and like, I think that's just kind of normal for these young guys. I think
Jake Fraley, like, at Wrigley was no great shakes either. If you recall the famous picture of him tumbling into the ivy.
Yeah. There's Kyle Lewis had a real rough dive in, I believe, his first game.
Yep.
And right, yeah. If
you've ever watched minor league games, like, you've seen minor league players make minor league plays sometimes. Even the best prospects will just, I mean, they just simply haven't been doing it as long. And sometimes they make some real boners. So, you know.
Yeah. One thing that I am worried about, because we've just seen this happen for the last 2 or 3 years, is when we have to go into Minute Maid and everyone in the stadium knows from the very first pitch that the Mariners have no chance, because I think those are the games where things do start to get away from you, and like, you start to really like kind of check out. Like, even, I mean, like, John, you probably know this, like, just from playing baseball, when it's like that, the third inning and you're down by 9 and like, no one's even making good contact at all, that's when you're like, okay, let's maybe pack this one in mentally, like, kind of go through the motions. I think we are going to see at least one or two of those games sadly, especially
and those fans are going to be
Yankee Stadium.
Astros fans are going to be ready to punch down this year because they're going to be so beleaguered. The Astros are going to go on a what's the opposite of a goodwill tour? A vengeance tour. Yeah, they're going to go around and everybody is just going to hate on them so hard. So I think that hardcore Astros fans are going to show up. They're going to be extra loud. And in games against teams like the Mariners, where they know they can win, they're going to show up and they're going to... I feel like we don't count any results this year from anything that happens at Minute Maid. Because it's just... It's gonna be a bloodbath. I think that we get a lot of questions about Scott Service. Is he a good manager? People don't like Scott Service for whatever reason. I think because...
You like Scott Service?
I mean, I think Scott Service is fine. I know from just kind of speaking with Braden Bishop's family, like, when the stuff that he's been going through, you know, with he lost his mom just recently, and in promoting his foundation and stuff, Service has been, like, a huge advocate for that, and he doesn't really have to. I mean, Bishop is not, you know... maybe one of your core guys, but I think Scott genuinely cares about the players. I don't think he's very good at speaking to the public. He's a little Bernie Sanders-ish, honestly. Like, he kind of has one... He's very bad at, like, playing the game or being political, which is very unfortunate given the roles each of them play. Like, Bernie Sanders does not care how you feel about him. He just wants to get the job done.
That's my Bernie Sanders. You did just speak with more enthusiasm about in a fake Bernie Sanders voice than Scott Service has used for literally anything.
I mean,
which I think is a dramatic difference between like him and like a lot of managers.
I mean, take Scott Service and have him grow up in like a Jewish New York family. I think you're going to see a very different, like, it's the same personality type. It's just, it's cooked differently. Put Bernie Sanders in, like, Wisconsin, and I think you get a totally different flavor there. But yeah, similarly, I think both of them are, like, not always great at relating to their public about how, because they care about what they care about and aren't great at, like, making nice with some of the people that they should maybe make nice with. And just Scott says stuff sometimes, and it comes out just bad. Like, I feel like I know what he means, but... it's very easy to take those statements, like what he said about Felix, in isolation. And yeah, so anyway, sorry. Do I like Scott Service? I think there's a chance. I think Scott Service is probably fine. I think there's a lot about Scott Service we don't know. I think that the reaction to him is largely overblown, just because the Mariners haven't been very good. I don't think that, like, the 2018 team collapsing was his fault. I don't think that them missing the playoffs in 2016 was his fault. I think, though, that this year, because things are going to be even rougher than they were last year. I mean, last year, like you said, John, they had players like Encarnacion. They had people, Bruce. They had people, even if they were trade chips, who were actively making the team better. They don't have those players so much this year. It is going to be about the young guys, so... this year, more than any other, I think, will be a test of how well Scott Service can motivate, inspire, and lead the next generation, the next core of Mariners players. And if he cannot do that, if team morale is not good in August when they're losing a bunch of games, and you will be able to tell, I think, then I think it is time to look at moving on from Scott Service. But this, to me, this is his test year.
Yeah, I believe, and this is just what I believe, that the Mariners are going to be in the top 1% of the top 1% of losses of all big league teams this year. That's just what I believe.
See, again, we got so much more, like...
why are you going to show me up like that? With, you know, I'm bad at impressions. Bernie is the one I can kind of do, much because I also don't care what people think of me.
Yes, I am wildly gesticulating in my room here doing this impression of the Senator Sanders, but I do not believe that this is an endorsement of any kind. I just want to make that clear that this is not a political podcast of any stretch of the
imagination. I should have known you wouldn't let me have one impression. You had to show me up.
Okay, while we're on the subject, though, let's... well, kind of. We got into a much different subject. But let's end with some fun. Let's go back to the Astros thing real quick, because I want to just remind everyone of what has happened. In every piece of content we put out, we're trying to get at least one little jab in on the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. And our very own Eric Sanford has thrown us a very nice alley-oop here on Twitter. He asked the question, what is the baseball blogging world equivalent of stealing signs? For me, I feel like that would be hacking into other sites, Slack channels, or the back end of their content making system, and pining them for ideas and things that we can then take. And if we know what's coming from the other sites, that makes our job much easier to plan for. You know, I think that would be the closest equivalent.
Yeah, probably like just directly stealing articles and not giving credit. It would be my equivalent. You're disrespecting the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely just like misquoting or like just drawing wild conclusions.
Ooh.
Off of taking what a beat reporter says,
like taking something Ryan Divish says, and just completely twisting it to fit your own agenda, like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being really smug about it the whole time.
Yeah, for sure.
Flipping your keyboard after you hit publish.
Listen, Vox put out their report, okay? That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done their due diligence, and they put out their report, and you can believe whatever you want to believe. But we're focused on this season, you know? Mm-hmm. It's all in the past.
Yeah.
One more question from James Roberts at Junk Ball Pitchin, one of the MVPs of this show.
Absolutely.
They have a similarly light question, which is, if the Mariners got a mascot dog, what breed would it be? How well-versed are you guys in dog breeds?
Not at all. Only cats.
Me neither.
Okay, a Portuguese water dog. I think, given the Mariners' like affinity for water and whatnot, I mean, it's right there in the name. And I think that's a hypoallergenic dog, so it wouldn't trigger anyone's allergies or anything. And I don't know who the most allergy-prone Mariner might be. I would say it's Kyle Seager, but he has a bunch of giant dogs. Maybe it's Tom
Ryan
Murphy.
Healy, but he would have ignored it.
But Ryan Healy is a dog.
That's true.
He's like a golden retriever wearing a human suit. I would maybe say Tom Murphy looks like he might have some allergy situation going on. So anyway, it would be a good dog for the clubhouse. You know, I think they're pretty chill. That is my pick.
I think for this season specifically, the Mariners are going to have a lot of Basset Hound qualities.
Oh, very droopy,
very, very lethargic, kind of letting things happen to them rather than actually doing anything on their own volition. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be a lot of, oh, okay, this happened, I'm just going to go lay down. That is, I think, a fitting mascot for the 2020 Mariners.
I like it.
I'm more inclined to the sort of active but similar result, but the more active alternative, which is sort of like a collie, a border collie or something of that sort, where they are just bouncing all over with energy, sort of youthful energy, and just kind of wrecking shop on occasion, but with good intentions. I think there will be a lot of high energy goofiness, but not necessarily, you know, sometimes it'll work out, sometimes it will look disastrous, but I think that
high energy goofiness was the rejected title of this podcast episode, actually. but as always, everyone, thank you for sticking with us, for listening to our wonderful, artful conversations about this Mariners team that is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a lot of stretching little things into big things to try to capture all of your interests. So if we've done that today, I feel like we've done our job. Kate, you will be at spring training coming up soon.
Yeah, March 9th.
If anyone wants to talk shop with Kate, catch her down there. The rest of us will be here trying to just figure out ways to make life a little more manageable, knowing that we have a lot of Zach Groats, Taylor Gilbo coming at us in the coming months.
Do not diss my boy Zach Groats.
And well, yeah, we obviously love all of these people, but we also, you know, it's like any family member. We know their limitations. We know the things they're going to do that's going to piss us off. And that's okay. That's part of living with all of these lovable hooligans. So, yeah, read Lookout Landing. Follow all of us on Twitter. I'm at mroberson22. Kate has reclaimed her actual name on Twitter at Kate Prusser. And John as well at John Troopin. Subscribe to this show. Give us 8 stars on whatever platform you're listening to. And now we have to actually cover real games. I think a welcome change of pace.
We have to do actual work.
Yep. So until that day comes, goodbye.
What's going on?